Session number 16305, Reel 2.
Mr. Cousins, Reel 2.
Yes, we cleaned the mess deck out and then went back to our stations again. By then we was in the alongside the jetty at Vianga and taking the injured off. They were taken to the hospital, including the captain, Vincent Sherbrooke, and he was taken to hospital as well. And we stayed there for overnight. And then eventually had to go to further down, I think it was Pollyarno Naval Base, to get repaired. And with that, we was only there, well, we was there for about 28 days, I think it was. We had to empty the magazines and so on so they could weld up and patch up the hole in the ship, and which they did. And then talk about food, we were short of food again. In fact, we were on mess catering and we had a big rebate to come back after not being having their food allowance. Anyway, the ship was repaired or patched up, even called it, and wooden tables and so on to make it more habitable so you could sleep in it. We had to sleep on the deck anyway, the mess deck coming back. And then we joined a convoy coming back. We were at the stern of the convoy. And lucky enough, it was the convoy wasn't hardly attacked at all, not by aircraft anyway, or surface craft, only U-boats. And I always remember it was their job to, there was one merchant ship that had been hit. And we had air job to us to fire a depth charge alongside the ship to try and sink it, because it was quite floating. And anyway, we didn't manage it, but there was bales of, well, I suppose, furs, I suppose, floating by. You know, maybe if you wanted to pick one up sort of thing. So we joined the convoy and then we came back to Scapa Flow.
Did you go ashore in Russia on that occasion?
Yes, at Vianga Bay, yes.
To do what?
Well, there was nothing there at all, really, but we went, try and did a bit of ice skating there, because there was a pond, and they managed to give us some skates, and we went skating, and then we went also to a building that was for recreation, I think, for the Russians. I can remember seeing all these balalaikas and ukuleles things on the stage, and we had a go sort of thing as we were doing, and that was all, nothing else. We had chance to go to Murmansk if we wanted to, but I didn't. You know, for the day sort of thing, or afternoon.
Any contact you had with the Russians themselves?
Oh yes, yes, because we went to the hospital to visit them next day sort of thing, or some of them, and I always remember the most contact was the Russian soldiers with rifles coming up to you, menacingly like sort of thing, asking for cigarettes. That's the only recollection I can remember of them.
Did they get any?
Well, we did give them one or two, yes. But we didn't have many ourselves anyway, and of course I didn't smoke, so I was at some. Yes. And we came back to... We left the convoy early on to Iceland and came back on our own down to Hull.
Can I just take you back to the action? How frightening was it for you during the actual action?
Well, I think being young, because only young at the 1920, you don't, and the things that go on, you don't realise. You don't think nothing of it until it's over. I think the worst part was burying the dead. Knowing full well that, you know, they were your friends a few hours ago.
How much could you see during the actual action itself?
Well, being that I was still on the gun deck and not being able to do a job on the gun, I was able to look around and see. And I say, this fall is shot, and but that's about all I could see. But I just didn't see when the other shells hit the ship. I can't understand that. Because, I'll say, it was snowing a bit at the time, snow showers, and surely they must have seen us when we couldn't see them, but only that time when I saw that ship.
Who was with you on X-Turret?
I can't remember the names, only this Cyril Casement. And this little, I was one of the little Scots lad there, and he was put on extra with me. It was his first ship and first trip. And he saw this cordite come up through the deck and he was pulling it out. And he had a pile of, next to I saw, he had quite a few cordite cases on round him. I said, well, but you don't want them, don't get any more up. Otherwise, if you'll get hit with the shrapnel, we'll all go up. So threw him over the side. Quick.
This was just an experience on his part.
I should think so, yes. Yeah. Because we didn't fire a shot. Didn't fire a round in that particular action.
Were the people on the ship orderly, or was there any disorganisation?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But I couldn't tell you what happened about up the mess deck where we'd been hit, because I was at the other end, you see, on X-Turret. So the only thing I could see was them bringing the wounded down and afterwards going to clean up the mess.
So you said you went to Hull after the action.
King George's
Dock. 1943 now.
Mm-hmm.
What happened then?
Well, the ship, all the crew went off, but a C&M party, care and maintenance party, and I was one of them. And there was about 20 of us, I should think, after the ammunition ship. The dockyard mates came on and repaired the ship in dry dock. And we were there for about 12 weeks, I should think.
Which dock in Hull was this?
King George, dry dock.
What kind of a job was made of the repairs?
Oh, very good. In fact, we had a new mast put on and new radar equipment, but of course still kept the old guns and things, and it didn't look any different really, but it was only for about 12 weeks, as I say, and
did you have much experience of Hull in wartime whilst the repairs were going on?
Well, there were no raids at the time we were here, not any big raids anyway. So we were able to go in town on the night time.
What were the entertainment attractions of Hull in 1943?
Only one thing really, isn't it? Pubs for drink and so on. I don't think there's any. I don't know, any cinemas home, I don't know.
Where did the sailors go? Which pubs?
Well, the worst ones you could find, I suppose. You know, for any entertainment, anyway. And I remember all around the station. Was it the White Lion was one. And the other one, Old Tony's was one, where I can remember because I had my birthday. My 21st birthday, I think.
And the pubs had entertainment laid on?
Well, no, we made our own sort of thing.
So, what happened with the Onslow when it had been repaired and you rejoined it?
Oh, we had to go back with a complete new crew again. And then I was given the job as, action station job as number one in the transmitting station. That is being in contact with the officer, gunnery officer in the director, giving me instructions over the phone and me passing that to the other members in this transmitting station, only three of us, and then the instructions went out to the guns.
Passing it on by word of mouth?
Oh, no, over the phones. Yes, word of mouth over the phones.
What duties did the ship take up then?
Well, my job in the TS was to, in fact, I enjoyed it, to be honest. Apart from giving the instructions over to the guns, I had to press the button to fire the guns, which was at a row of lights, 1, 2, 3, 4 guns, plus the 4-inch, and on the instructions from the gunnery officer, when to fire, I had to push the buzzer to fire the guns, or to let them know when to fire. And, of course, and tell them what type of shell, depending on what we were using, armour-piercing, or for surface craft, or anti-aircraft shell, or bombarding shells, or whatever it was. And so I really enjoyed that, pushing the buzzer and firing the guns.
Was it more Arctic convoys you were now in?
Oh, yes. And then I just can't think the number of the convoy when the next one was, but we, after training again, a new crew practically, we joined the own fleet again, and then went on convoys again. And I know after one convoy we had to go to the North African landings. We went into...
That must have been before your VC action, because the North Africa landing was in November 1942.
Before that, yeah. We had to go into Londonderry in the foil to repaint ship a bit. And then we went down to North Africa to pick up a convoy of American liners, ships. And for some unknown reason, we called in at the Azores, which were neutral for a few hours. I don't know whether it's for water or what, I don't know, but we only saw a few hours, and we were told that a U-boat had just left. And we left during the day, and just for a bit of exercise, we all used to walk up and down on the upper deck, and it was a lovely day. I was walking backwards and forwards on the upper deck, and I looked towards the sea, and I saw this periscope sticking out the water, about 3 foot. And it must have only been about 20 yards away. I can never understand why it wasn't picked up by the Aztecs. And I shouted up to the after lookout, and he reported it to the bridge straight away, and we had to stop there for quite a number of hours to keep the U-boat down. We never did get it. Keep it down while the convoy went on its way. Then I think we went to Gibraltar after that, because we didn't take any action over the North African landings. We came from Gibraltar back to Sapaflo again.
What other incidents stick out in your mind from the Arctic convoys?
Well, we was in charge of the convoy that the Shan was attacked. Instead of sending big convoys up, they used to send smaller convoys more often so they can keep cruisers permanently up there. And so these convoys would pass from one to another sort of thing, and vice versa, convoys coming back. Anyway, it was about... my job then was quartermaster. When I left Hull, I was quartermaster. I was steering the ship, of course. And when you're at sea, but when you're harbour, you were on the gangway and or at a buoy, you pipe necessary ships that go by or any dignitaries that come on. And it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I was on watch, and we heard that the Shanos was out, so of course we went to action stations, and I was in the TS at the time, and I could hear the gunnery officer talking over the phone, sorry, not to me, but I could listen in. And I heard him saying that where the Shannos was. And next time I heard that the Shannos was coming down at us at so many knots, quite fast, straight from the north. And I thought, well, he's going to give orders to load up in a minute, surely. But he didn't, and next thing I heard, there was three cruisers there, and pushed them off the convoy. So I went on their way, and then I heard the captain was asked for for destroyers from our convoy to go and torpedo it. And this is near enough a year to the day when the Victoria Cross was won. So I thought, well, here we go again. So anyway, lucky enough, the captain, he knew this empty convoy was coming back from Russia, and he detailed, I think it was four destroyers from their convoy to go and torpedo, which was the Savage, the Stord, and some other one beginning with S.
Sumeray, maybe.
Sumeray, that's right. And I think the Savage got a director blown off. So, about 4:30 to 5:00, we heard the big ships were there, including the Duke of York, and they'd sunk the Shannos, which was a good thing for us. So we went on our way, and I can't remember any other incidents on that particular convoy.
How did the crew feel when you heard the Shannos had been sunk?
Well, say, there's only three of us in this little room, but we were all pleased, because when I first mentioned about the Shannos coming our way, there was two of them that were on the ship when Captain Vincent Sherbert won his VC. And I looked at their faces, and they didn't look a bit, they looked a bit white. So I thought, well, I wonder if I'm the same. Anyway, they're soon all right.
Did you go into the debris that was left after the Shannos had been sunk?
No, not at all. No, I didn't see a thing.
Any other memories from that or other Arctic experiences?
Well, not on the Onslow. Only the
just with the Onslow for the time being.
Yeah, I see. Only for the fact that we've taken many high persons on the ship from Scapa, from Scotland to Scapa Flow. We took the King once. King George the Sixth, and we had to be in action stations just across from Scotland through the Pentland Firth to Scapa Flow with the aircraft over the top. And
for the benefit of the King?
Yes, and we've taken, I think it was Churchill and many others.
You haven't said anything about the dealing with the severe weather of the Arctic. Can you say something about your memories of that?
Oh, yes. When it was very rough sort of thing, we were pleased at times because you can guarantee there'll be no U-boats around. But it was the icing that was the trouble. Many times we had to go and chip the icing off the guns and so on. And when it was storms, it was storms.
Which did you fear the most, the weather or the enemy?
Well, the enemy, no doubt, because we could sort of get used to the weather. We were well equipped with comforts from America and so on.
What did they consist of?
Fur-lined leather coats, jackets, and masks which you completely could put over your head, your face, and little holes for your nose, and round your mouth you had a little bit, there was a like press studded on and the little holes in, but the trouble is your breath used to freeze and you had to take that off because there's no use at all.
And these were produced in America?
Oh yes, Comforts funds.
By factories or by civilians?
Well, they sent by civilians, but made in America.
So they were from individual civilians, were they?
Well, partly, I suppose, groups, no doubt.
Did you go ashore again in Russia, apart from that once?
No, never.
Now, you left the Onslow, you told me before that incident where they picked up people at Slapton Sands in 1944.
Yes.
In fact, according to your record, you left Onslow 16th of February 1944.
Yes.
What was the next ship you took?
I wanted to go in for a course on ASDIC, submarine detector, which I did. Dunoon, in Scotland. And then for the practical, we had to go to Campbelltown, HMS Nimrod, just for the practical side of it. Now, I remember there, they went down on a submarine that was built during the 14 War. And they got up, and it was full of sand at Sheerness, I believe, they said. And it was an experience going down on that. It was just for exercise, just what it was like. And when I completed the course, I went back to Osprey, which is the main depot for the submarine detectors, and then went to join the ship HMS Berry at Belfast.
Can you describe it?
Yes, it's American-built, typical American frigate. It was entirely different to the British ships, whereas British ships we had to sleep anywhere and everywhere, sort of thing, in hammocks and so on, if you had to could find a place. But this ship, they're bunks and ice cool water, sort of thing, and all the modcons. So we found it entirely different. And the first trip that I had on the Berry, and the first trip they ever made on the Berry, was back up to Russia again, escorting two liners that were carrying Russian soldiers, I believe, that the Germans had sent back for some reason. And I believe, I understand, they didn't want to go, but anyway, I didn't see them at all, but we took them back to Russia, Kola Inlet, and they went inside to Vyanga Bay. And then we went to, stood off Kola Inlet, ready to bring a convoy back.
You were telling me about a torpedo incident. Can you repeat it?
Yes. Well, whilst we were off the Kola Inlet, sweeping for submarine U-boats, we picked up a surface object, which we thought was a U-boat, by radar, and we found out afterwards that it was a tinfoil that the Germans had a habit of letting off to make you think it's a surface craft to be picked up by your radar. Of course, we went after it, and eventually we didn't pick up the submarine, the U-boat, but I picked up the noise of a torpedo coming to the ship. It was coming from the starboard quarter. Air instructions are, when we hear a torpedo, it sounds just like a little two-stroke motorbike engine. Air instructions were to report it straight away to the bridge so we could turn the bows of the ship round as far as possible, pointing at the torpedo. But I'm afraid we only got halfway round, being the idea being that the torpedo was coming from the starboard quarter. And I heard the torpedo come right up to the ship. Well, practically anyway, I just took my phones off, ready for the bang, and there was no bang. So I put my phones back on quick, and I could hear it going the other side. So whether it was a deep setting or whether it missed the ship either end, I don't know, but it was lucky there. So we fetched the convoy back.
You joined the ship, the Berry, 13th of June 1944, I think you went to the English Channel off Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there?
Well, we just had the sweep from England to France to keep U-boats up and so on. And then as the fighting went up, we went further up the coast. And it was, I think it was on a VE day, because I always remember off the Dutch coast somewhere, a very shallow water, and they was playing the, was it Rule Britannia, though, I think it was all day practically, something like that. And I was on the Asdic set at the time, and I picked up a contact. It was fish. So you're supposed to report all contacts, but I didn't. But the captain was on the bridge, and he heard it. And he was a nice chap. He was a stockbroker. He was a nice chap. RMBR, of course. And he shouted, "You've got a contact there." So I said, "Yes, sir, it's fish." He said, "Right, sound the alarm, drop a charge." So he dropped a charge on purpose, and so all these fish came to the surface. It was ling, the fish. And just like a fish and sardines in a tin, they're all close to the ship, right inside, and they dropped scrambling nets. And, of course, we had fish for that day and plus the other ships. We spread it around. So that's the lighter side of the story.
That was VE Day itself, was it?
I should think so. I know there was a lot of noise and then that. Yes, but after coming from the Onslow, which was the flotilla leader, Captain Dean, having a full captain on there, going to the Berry, which we called a canteen boat because it's always last in the line, and it was just a 2.5 ring captain, RMVR, I noticed a lot of difference. Much slacker sort of thing. And much better, anyway.